Support for the Front Row on FM 89.1 comes from the Community Foundation of West Texas and from Citibank. Citibank's wealth management team of advisors, private bankers, and trust officers help customers create personalized strategies to help connect with long-term goals. More information on Citibank Wealth Management is available at 806-687-2955. And from Texas Tech's JT and Margaret Talkington College of Visual and Performing Arts. Vast opportunities abound in art, music, theater, and dance. Dean Noel Zoller invites you to enjoy some of the 800 performances and exhibits produced each year by vastly talented students, faculty, and visiting artists. Texas Tech's JT and Margaret Talkington College of Visual and Performing Arts. Vastly different. A Texas Tech University professor of music has just recorded the world premiere of a lost violin sonata by Samuel Barber. Find out all the details on today's show. I hope you can stay tuned. On today's edition of The Front Row, we are in the office of Dr. John Gilbert at the Texas Tech University School of Music. He is professor of violin here at the School of Music, and he's just released a new recording, a 2-CD set called Youthful Passions, and it includes music by Richard Strauss and Dohnányi, among others, and we're here to talk to John Gilbert about that today. So thank you very, very much for being on the program.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Well, there's so many things to unpack. First of all, a new CD release is exciting just in and of itself, and the repertoire is exciting. But the first thing on this new CD set is a violin sonata by Samuel Barber.
Yes.
I had no idea. And in fact, it's a world premiere recording. Tell us the story.
Well, in 1928, when Barber was a freshman at the Curtis Institute of Music, he was by that time already an acclaimed young American genius and published by Schirmer. And he composed this large three-movement sonata in F minor, assigned it the opus number 4, and gave one performance of it in November of 1928 at the Curtis Institute of Music with himself at the piano and a friend of his, who, by the way, is no relation to myself, whose name was Gamma Gilbert.
Okay.
A violin student at the Curtis Institute of Music. The piece won enormous acclaim. It won the Joseph Burns Prize for New Chamber Music from Columbia University, a very prestigious award that's still around today. It was set to be published, and it vanished. And as near as anybody can tell, what happened was somebody, maybe his teacher, maybe the performers, somebody remarked to Barber that they thought it was quite Brahmsian and quite romantic. And it seems that he took this to mean that it wasn't original enough and he was going to withdraw it and do some revisions to it, which never came about. If that part of the story is a little bit apocryphal, because I can't absolutely 100% verify that this was said to him. But if it was said to him, it's odd because Brahms was his favorite composer. Mm. So I would have thought, taken that as a compliment. Flash forward to 2005, I used to teach at a summer festival in Vermont called the Green Mountain Music Festival. And an old friend and colleague of mine is a wonderful violinist by the name of Chin Kim, who lives in New York City and teaches at the Manus School, had a student perform the Barber Violin Concerto, which of course is one of the staples of the repertoire,
right, on
a student recital the night before. We were sitting around talking and in the next day at lunch, and in the course of the conversation, I said, gee, it's a shame the violin sonata is not around. That early Barber style is so lush and romantic. Surely it was beautiful. And Chin said, oh, I saw the manuscript to the last movement this past winter. I didn't think much of it. I said, no, you didn't see it. It's been gone for, 80 years. He said, yeah, I did. I said, no, you didn't. And we went back and forth like this for a minute. It turned out that he is very close friends with Barbara Heyman. Barbara is the world's foremost scholar on the music of Samuel Barber. She wrote the definitive biography, the thematic catalog, and she is the curator of the Barber Archive at the Library of Congress. And she's a musicologist who teaches at Queens College in New York, and she's a friend of Chin's. And As it turned out, the manuscript to the third movement had fallen into her possession, and she was in the process of preparing it for deposit in the Library of Congress. And she had called Chin, and he'd come over and he'd read it through. So I was thrilled. I was so excited. I said, what's it like? And, you know, and Chin said, well, it was a little bit hard to tell. I wasn't all that interested. And I said, Chin, it doesn't matter if you're interested. This is history. It's early barber. How bad could it be? You know, early barber is the barber of the string quartet, the cello sonata, Dover Beach. I mean, it is the most beautiful music that ever poured from this man's pen. It had to have been something special. And he said, well, you should do it. And I said, okay. Right. And at that time, and I was still at, I was a tech at that time, we had a faculty quartet that was playing some contemporary chamber music in Carnegie Hall the following winter. So Chin put me in touch with Barbara Heyman. And during that trip in the winter of 2005, I went up to New York and I was sitting in Barbara's apartment. She asked me, invited me over to come see the manuscript. And I held this manuscript like a holy relic in my hands and almost wept over it because I realized at that moment I was one of three violinists who had ever seen this music. Right. The first when the premiere, then Chin, and then Barbara. So that's how I came into contact with the piece. And it was not a sketch. It was an absolutely perfect finished manuscript in Barber's hand. He wrote it out in pen and ink, and he wrote performance notes from his 1928 performance in colored pencil. There was not a note out of place. There wasn't anything that was vague. It was just a finished manuscript that had never been published. And that's when my relationship with the piece began.
Just to be clear, your friend Chin only saw the last movement.
There is only the last movement.
That's all there is.
That's okay. All there is. Okay. And here's that. Now, that this is a rather lengthy story about how I came into contact with it. I'd known about the piece's existence since college. I'd read about it. People knew that it existed. Isaac Stern had asked Barber to do it. Arnold Steinhardt had asked Samuel Barber to do it. Barber said he'd love to have them do it. He had no idea what had happened to the manuscript. And that is the mysterious part of the other part of the story. What happened was an artist who was a friend and a former tenant of the Barber family. The Barber family was from Westchester, and they were rather wealthy. They at different times, they were also patrons of the arts. And they had a friend who was an artist and I guess was struggling, and they had rented him a room. Somehow this manuscript had come into his possession. Part of the fun part of the story is that when Barber at this time in 1928 as an 18-year-old was still living at home, and his mother, Daisy, had a habit, not unlike Haydn's wife, of going into his study and grabbing sheafs of manuscript to use as gift wrap to send to presents. So it's possible that's what happened.
Oh, my.
Anyway, this artist, flash forward to 2004, died, and he left in his estate were these manuscript, was the completed manuscript of the third movement of the violin sonata and the first six pages of the cello sonata. Now, the cello sonata, all but the first six pages of the manuscript have been, since its writing, intact and published. These six pages revealed nothing new. It is exactly the same music that is on this recording. This is not a new version of the cello sonata. Barber oversaw the publication of that very shortly after this violin sonata was written. But the pages of the manuscript were missing, the first six pages. There were the first six pages. What happened was when this friend of the family passed away, he didn't have any heirs and he left all of his belongings to another friend. That friend serendipitously happened to know Barbara Heyman. And so when he found these manuscripts, he contacted Barbara and he said, I've got the manuscripts to look, six pages of manuscript that look like they belong to the cello sonata. She was very excited. She said, yes, that's probably the missing first six pages. And he said, and I have this other thing that looks like it might be a cello sonata, but in a very high range. It's an F minor. She said, that doesn't look right. And he sent her the manuscript, and there on the top of it, it said VLN, piano, Allegro Appassionato. And the thing is that we know this is the third movement of the violin sonata because the actual program from the December, or might have been November, 1928 concert at the Curtis Institute still exists with the sonata on it, with the movements listed. There's even a photograph of it in Barbara Heyman's biography of Samuel Barber. And there it says, Allegro Appassionato. That's what we have. We have the third movement of the violin sonata.
My goodness.
Now, my initial contact with the piece, I wanted to do the re-world premiere of the piece. And I contacted Barbara and I together, contacted the Barber Foundation, because my association with this piece is now almost 15 years old. And at that time, they wanted to attract, understandably, somebody like Anna Sophie Mutter or Itzhak Perlman, or, you know, they couldn't get anybody interested in it. So rather than have another performance, they just said, well, go ahead and publish it. So they decided, okay, we're going to let Schirmer publish it, and because that's who publishes all of Barber's music, and we'll put the manuscript in the Barber archive. Fine. So they published it, and they published it in a volume of music called Samuel Barber, The Complete Music for Violin and Piano, which is ironic because there is no music for violin and piano by Samuel Barber. The only thing there is this third movement of the sonata, and Barber himself arranged the slow movement of his piano concerto for violin and piano. It's a beautiful piece. I've played it. I think you may have played it with a couple of my students, mm-hmm. called the Canzona for violin,
right,
and piano.
Yeah.
That's actually the
mm-hmm.
slow movement of the piano concerto. Those are the only things for violin and piano by Barber. Everything else in this volume is an arrangement. Like, there's an arrangement of the Adagio for strings for violin and piano. With that publication, they released a CD of everything in the publication with the wonderful American violinist Frank Almond and William Wolfram playing piano. And that's how I first heard it. But it wasn't a commercial release. It was just with this particular publication. So I thought, aha, recording project. I'm going to learn this piece. I'm going to perform it. And I'm going to record it. So I got the music. I learned the work. I played it throughout the United States. I played it in South America. I played it in Europe. And then it was getting to be time to. I even had done an interview on Minnesota Public Radio some years ago when I was performing it up in Minneapolis about the piece. And then we went ahead and made this recording in, I can't even remember the year. What year did we do this? I have to look on here. In 2015, we made this recording. So it was 4 years ago. Well, actually 5 years ago, because it was January. It's almost 5 years ago. And after we had done the recording, after it was finished and it was going through the editing process, the pianist I had worked with in Minnesota, a wonderful pianist by the name of Francesca Tortorello, called me and she said, John, have you and Dimitri made your recording of the Barber yet? I said, yeah, we finished it about a month ago. Why? And she said, don't release it. And I said, why? And she said, it's published in the wrong order. I said, what do you mean it's published in the wrong order? She said, she was at that time doing, she's since completed, but she was doing doctoral work in collaborative piano at the University of Minnesota. She liked the piece so much when we played it, she decided to write her doctoral dissertation on it. In the course of her research, she discovered that Schirmer had actually published the music literally in the wrong order. All of the music that's in the sonata was in the publication, but there were 20 bars out of place here and 15 bars out of place there. It was just all hodgepodge thrown together. And that's the version I had learned and had been performing on three continents and been talking to people about. So I called Barbara Heyman to confirm this. She confirmed it. Okay. Schirmer had, at that point, withdrawn the publication and the recording. They've since reissued it, but now minus the recording. So now there's no recording of the piece.
Right.
Correct or incorrect. So I got the music. We relearned it in the original version, and I liked it before. It's a much better piece. You know, it had some strange formal things about it that didn't really hold together. The way it had been pasted together by the publisher. It turned out to be a much... Originally, we thought, well, we did the recording. Maybe we can take our recording sessions and paste the recording together in the right order. But it became immediately clear that that was not going to sound satisfying, mm-hmm. because it mm-hmm. just... It was a completely different work once you played it in the right order. I had only seen the manuscript once, so I had... You know, I did not remember... by the time it was published, I didn't remember the order of the music. I just was excited to have it and started playing it. And so we went back, we relearned it, and we re-recorded it. And flash forward, the CD has just been released. I'm very happy to say that it's gotten wonderful critical acclaim. And I hope music lovers all over the world will fall in love with this piece. And I hope if somebody else has the other two movements of the sonata floating around in their attic, they'll go pawing through their trunks to find it, because we are really missing an extraordinary treasure from the pen of an 18-year-old genius. Wow. Yeah.
What a story.
Yeah.
My goodness gracious. And now recorded by you on the Fleur de
Son.
Fleur de Son label. Right. Excellent.
It's a division of, or it's distributed by Naxos.
Mm-hmm.
And it's on all major music carriers. You can buy the CD from Fleur de Sang. You can purchase it on Amazon or any other place that you like to buy classical music. It's on all the major carriers now.
This two CD set also includes the Strauss E flat major sonata, a work I know that you've had in your fingers for years, a long time, long experience with.
30 years I've played the piece, yeah. And I've played it probably more than any other 19th century sonata.
Right. So that also is on this. And the sonata in C sharp minor by Erno Dohnányi.
Yes.
A work that a lot of people may not be familiar with at all. How did this come about?
The original CD project was to record a single CD and just record the Barber and the Strauss. And it's the violin sonatas and the cello sonatas by both composers. Mm. The CD is called Youthful Passions because these are pieces that were written early on in their careers and they never turned back to the form. There's only one violin sonata by Strauss and only one cello sonata. There is only one violin sonata and one cello sonata by Barber. When we had finished the recording, and this is one of the reasons the recording took so long to come to fruition, when we had finished it, the CD was 83 minutes long. And the label, this particular label uses a particularly, I don't know the technical terms, you would probably be more familiar with it. The recording sound that Fleur de Sang uses is unique to Fleur de Sang.
Mm-hmm.
It's a particularly high definition, high quality of recorded sound. And the CD would only, using that technology, would only hold 80 minutes of music. Right. Actually, maybe all CDs will only hold. Is that true?
That's right.
Yeah, oh, okay. Right, yeah. Well, we had 83 minutes of music. Yeah. The label liked what we had. They said, we don't want to cut anything, and we don't want to release two separate CDs. Could you come up with another composer, you know, that would fit with this program and release a two CD set? And we said, okay. So then we started hunting around. And, you know, Strauss is this really late German, wear your heart on your sleeve, dripping with emotion, romantic music. I mean, it is glorious, glorious music. And the early Barber is early 20th century American romanticism, heavily influenced by the music of all the moderns of his era. But in 1928, the moderns of his era were Richard Strauss,
right, yeah,
and Fauré and Brahms, even his favorite composer, had only died 30 years earlier. So, I mean, early Barber is also very, very romantic. So we were looking for something that fit between this late German romanticism and this slightly edgy post-World War I American romanticism. And we stumbled upon the Dohnányi sonatas for cello and piano. My colleague and dear friend George Work had performed the Dohnányi cello sonata. And he said, you should see if there's a violin sonata. And I said, I don't think there is. I've never heard of it. And I looked it up. And sure enough, there is a single violin sonata in C sharp minor. It's a relatively early work. Not as early as his cello sonata, but it's early. And I listened to it and I liked it. And I said, okay, I think we've got our fit. It's somewhere between the German romanticism and the American edgy post romanticism. And because these composers composed these works when they were early on in their career, that's the title, Youthful Passions. The only thing that doesn't quite fit that is the Dohnányi violin sonata, which was written in his early 30s. But it does have an early opus number. It's opus 21, and Dohnányi's opus numbers do go into the hundreds. So In his catalog of works, it's a relatively early piece, and he never returned to the medium for violin or cello. The cello sonata is very early. It's opus 8. And it does sound like Brahms took a holiday in Hungary. In Hungary.
Right, yeah.
You know,
right.
I mean, it is a really dark, brooding, passionate music.
Yeah.
The violin sonata by Dohnányi is a... we've known each other for many years. You know what a violin geek I am.
Right.
If I don't know of a violin piece, there's probably a reason.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
I didn't know that this even existed, and I listened to it and I thought, I don't know why I haven't heard this before, because it's a beautiful piece. It's a little bit quirky. He was experimenting with form by this point. He had departed from strict late German romantic models and was fooling around with form. So the violin sonata is a single, it's in three movements, but it is composed straight
single
through.
Single piece.
Yeah, straight through with only a breath in between the movements. It's really continuous, and it's an unfolding gigantic sonata form and variation form over the course of its 20 minutes. But it's very lyrical, very passionate music with lots of ventures into foreign, unrelated keys, which is what you would expect from this late 19th, early 20th century style.
All right. Well, the CD set is called Youthful Passions, just out on the Fleur de Son label. And for those of you who subscribe to a lot of the periodicals like Fanfare Magazine and things like that, you'll be seeing the terrific reviews and commentary that have been said about these performances. Music by Richard Strauss, Ernst von Dohnányi, and Samuel Barber, this world premiere recording of the Barber Sonata on this new CD set. John Gilbert, our guest today on the front row, professor of violin here at the Texas Tech University School of Music. What a wonderful program today. John, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it, and you're very welcome.
Today's edition of our program will be on our website, kttz.org, later today. Rachel Boyd produces The Front Row. I'm your host, Clint Barrick. Thank you for tuning in and listening. Support for The Front Row comes from the Lubbock Symphony Orchestra, announcing the 2019-2020 season. More information is at lubbocksymphony.org.